This is episode number 15 with Dina Kaplan. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. Gosh, you guys, it feels so good to have this podcast up and running again. You know, it's been a couple weeks since I've been back from my hiatus, and I'm pumped to keep delivering to y'all. Now, before I hop into today's episode, I wanted to share an awesome free 5-day experience called Ignite Your Magic that I have coming out for coaches and service-based entrepreneurs. So if you're a coach or a service-based entrepreneur and you've, you know, learned strategy on how to build your business, but you still feel stuck and you haven't been taking action to really put yourself out there because you're afraid of being seen or judged, well, this is for you. In my free 5-day Ignite Your Magic experience, you will be supported to break through fears, to show up, be seen, and start unleashing your magic to the world. Now, this is going to be super action-oriented to get you out of any stuckness, to take the action that will actually move the needle with your business and bring in financial abundance. And I'll also be doing some subconscious reprogramming with you too. So this all starts on Monday, June 4th. If you want to come play with me, you have to get yourself signed up, and you can do that at bit.ly/5dayignitemagic. So that's the number 5 in there. So bit.ly/5dayignitemagic to get in to the free 5-day experience. And if you know someone, you know, who this could be really good for, please share it out with them too, because the more magic that's unleashed in those 5 days, the better. And I cannot wait to support you with unleashing your magic. I've got another awesome episode today with my incredible friend, Dina Kaplan. Now, Dina is the founder of The Path, which teaches meditation for the modern mind. And The Path has taught thousands of people to meditate around the world and at festivals, including South by Southwest, Sundance, Further Future, Dialogue, and more. And Dina is a certified meditation teacher, and she has led meditations across the country at conferences for large and small groups, for brands and individuals, and in Japan, Kazakhstan, and elsewhere in Asia and Europe. And she has studied and practiced dozens of meditation techniques, including Vipassana, mindfulness-based stress reduction, Vedic or mantra meditation, loving kindness or metta meditation, and more. And Dina has a column in Forbes.com, and she's written articles about living mindfully for a lot of amazing publications like the New York Times, Today.com, and Marie Claire. Now, on today's show, Dina shares her story of how her old belief of I'm not good enough as I am ran her life and the mess that it created. And that belief had her put on a false mask to fit in, and she pretended to be someone she wasn't. You know, this BS belief of I'm not good enough as I am, or this lie, because, you know, that's really what it is, it's a lie, it affects so many people. And it's something that I am crazy passionate about getting rid of and rewriting for everyone that I come into contact with. So I'm really excited to talk about this today and to create some relief for any of you who are struggling with that lie. And in this episode, you know, Dina and I go deep into how this negatively impacted her life and how it wove its way through her career and came to a head when she co-founded and was running her first tech startup, Blip.tv. Because at that time, you know, Dina was named one of Fortune magazine's most powerful women entrepreneurs, Because at that time, when Dina was named one of Fortune magazine's most powerful women entrepreneurs and Fast Company's most influential women of Web 2.0, now on the outside, it seemed like she was living the life, but on the inside, her whole world was falling apart and she suffered through panic attacks for 2 years because she was deeply struggling with who she authentically was and who she was pretending to be. So in this episode, some of the things that we chat about are how Dina released the belief of I'm not good enough and came home to her own heart to own her truth and love herself. And we also talk about how inauthenticity can harm you versus help you. We talk about the importance of asking for support, a powerful practice to free yourself of resentments, ways to develop your intuition and to have it lead you. And Dina gives her top 3 tips on how to best support yourself out of stress, plus so much more. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And for everything that we mentioned in today's show and for the links to connect with Dina, you can check it out in the show notes over at stephaniekwong.com/EP15. Okay, let's drop in. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm so pumped to have you on as a guest.
Thank you. Today is a great day to be on this. We will talk about why.
Well, I love your vision and your mission that you have right now. I watched your TED Talk. For those listening, if you've not seen it, Dina's got 2 amazing TED Talks that she's done, but one of them in particular that I saw really deeply resonated where you talk about the lies that we tell ourselves. And it started off with a lie that you told yourself that set you on the path. So I'd love for you to share a bit about your story.
Oh, thanks. Gosh, I actually got chills that started at the top of my shoulders and just ran through my arms when you said that. It's funny because it loomed so large in so much of my life. And I do, it's funny, when you said that, I feel like I've gotten over it. I feel like now, even more than a year ago when I gave that talk in Athens, I'm starting to really get past it, which means that anyone can. So my lie was, I'm not good enough. And what's funny, Stephanie, is I know exactly where it started from. I didn't know this until I did a Vipassana. It's one of those 12-day silent meditation retreats. And when I did my first Vipassana, because I've done a few now, I did the first one in India. It was about 5 years ago. And on day 8, so this is 87 hours into meditation because you're meditating 10 hours a day.
It's a lot.
it's the real deal. I won't lie. We also had no soap and no toilet paper, and it was 120 degrees and no air conditioning. I mean, it was India to the max of everything you could imagine India being when you're not staying at the 5-star resort.
No glamping there.
Oh my God. It was beyond. I mean, there were other conditions about it that were so disgusting. Disgusting. I will not. I will not put them into this podcast, lest anyone feel uncomfortable. But yeah, it was raw living, to say the least. But the meditation was really powerful amidst that. It was almost a way out of the very, very, very difficult conditions in which we were living. And so you had to meditate 10 hours a day. On day 8 at 3:00, I had this insight. It was almost like memory floating up from Dumbledore's Ponsi for any of you Harry Potter fans out there. And it was a memory I hadn't thought about since it had happened. I was 8 years old. I was in summer camp. Actually, not 8. I don't know. Maybe it was 8 or 9 or 10, something like that. I'm not exactly sure. But I was in summer camp. I was a little kid. And I was not cool. Like, maybe you and I are cool now. Maybe. Or we pretend to be. I was not cool. I mean, I was this little kid from Pittsburgh, pretty insulated, not cosmopolitan at all. I hadn't traveled. And I basically became the reject of the camp. All sorts of bad things happened. I was bullied, you would call it now. They didn't really have that word then, or it wasn't as commonly used as it is now. And I remember at the end of that summer, I made a vow to myself. So as a little girl, I said, Dina, you will never be the reject again. You're going to hone your social skills so finely that for the rest of your life, you're going to be popular. And what's funny is that I did. I would look around and watch the popular girls. I would see how they spoke and what expressions they would use and how they would use their hands. And I would imitate them. And I learned and trained and studied how to be popular. And then I was for the rest of my life, actually. But what's funny is that in doing that, okay, I was popular. I got invited to lots of parties. That was great, I guess. But what I learned to do in that process is to suppress any ounce of me. I didn't say what I wanted to say. I thought what people wanted to hear from me. I imagine what that would be. And then I would say that I suppressed my natural emotions and would only show the emotions of what a popular kid would feel. And I lost myself in that process. So a lot of my adult life since then, since that Vipassana, has been about trying to relearn how to be myself.
Yeah. Wow. That's so beautiful. And I know we all tell these terrible lies to ourselves that are so limiting and so disempowering. And then we start to create these behaviors that are not who we are because all we want is to be loved and liked, and yet it's killing our soul. And I know I would love for you to share too how that warped into even your career.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so if you don't have that one, mine was I'm not good enough. Yours might be I don't deserve to leave this relationship, or
I'm not lovable.
Yeah, I'm not lovable as I am. I need to be something else, smarter, prettier, whatever it is. Or it might be I don't even deserve to move out of my city. I think a lot of inertia that people feel might be around their job, their city, their relationship. And you just think, this insidious thought to yourself, consciously or subconsciously, which is that I don't deserve to leave this current situation that I'm in, whatever that is. So for mine, the I'm not good enough was just that. It was that simply. It was I'm not good enough as I am. And it very, very perniciously wove its way through my career. And it really came to a head when I was helping to run. I co-founded and was helping to run my first startup. The company was called Blip. We were the platform for web shows. So think of a very early version of YouTube, but no viral videos. We were really focused on shows, people who wanted to do an episodic show about really anything or and everything. It could be fiction or nonfiction. So we raised $35 million over a number of years. There are five co-founders. We had no idea what we were doing when we started, but pretty soon we were off to the races. The company started doing really well. We pretty quickly became one of the top 50 sites in the country. I mean, that means there are 300 million video views that we were having a month. I mean, it's a huge site. Company is growing. I'm the only female founder of this company and also really one of the only female founders in New York City where I was at the time and really in the country that I knew of. I was also really friendly, right? Remember that girl who wanted to be popular. So I was the most outgoing, the most polished. So I became friends with all of the key magazine editors and journalists and newspaper reporters and conference organizers, social, popular me. This had a lot of advantages, right? I got named a Fortune Most Powerful Entrepreneur. I got invited to all these amazing events. I was hanging with Warren Buffett. I was hosting events, promoting the New York City startup scene with Rupert Murdoch and the mayor and Jimmy Fallon. And I mean, on the outside, I was really living the life. And yet on the inside, it was a really different story. I was actually a mess. I say in that talk, I was held up as a role model for women founders and really all founders, but I myself was playing a role. It was like I was starring in this film called Imposter Syndrome. And I had no idea who to share that with anyone. And a lot of these issues were around me not being myself. And that could have survived in my life if I weren't the founder of a super fast growing startup and in the press every day. But as the company scaled, that didn't scale. Because if I'm managing people and I just want them to like me and I want to, quote, be popular, I can't give them negative feedback because I'm worried they won't like me and God forbid they're going to quit. I'm worried about asking for more help from my co-founders. I'm worried about asking for a team. I'm worried about really I should have demanded a team because the company started really growing in size. All the departments doubled, tripled, and quadrupled, except for the 8 divisions that I took on to run, for which I was afraid to ask for one single direct report in any of the departments.
What did you think would happen if you asked for support?
I mean, the thing is, I was worried that I was going to take a negative, that I was going to be the cause for a negative hit on the P&L, which of course I would be, but no one else worried about that. We were hiring by the dozen. So why I was worried about hiring one person in any of the 7, depending on how you look at 7 or 8 departments that I was running 5 years into the company is crazy. But I was also worried that I wouldn't be a good boss. And my dad is this big Harvard Business School professor. So I was horrified at this idea that I wouldn't be a good boss when my dad was this big management guru. And I was worried that they wouldn't like me. And I was just worried.
Is that I'm not enough, like being bleeding through all other areas of your life.
Just bleeding through everything. Gosh. And it actually, to be super honest with you, it made me a worse boss. It made me a worse co-founder. It started to hurt me in what I was doing professionally because you can't run a company worried about being popular. You just can't do it. You need to make tough calls. You need to fire people. You need to give direct feedback to people or else your team is really uneasy. Sometimes I actually think it was worse that I didn't give feedback, negative feedback to my team, but they could feel what I was feeling. But that I didn't say it. So they knew what was wrong, but they didn't know what. And people would quit. Everyone that worked for me quit or wanted to quit because what a terrible situation to be in as a team member where you can feel that your boss doesn't like you or isn't happy with your work, but they never say why. It's the worst case scenario. So this I'm not good enough was not going to scale. Mm-mm. And what's funny is that I wasn't mindful of any of this. I was just running. I was in 7 meetings or calls a day. I started being on boards. I got all these amazing honors, but my body revolted from this whole situation. So even though I wasn't big into mindfulness at the time, my body just knew that this was not working. And what ended up happening is I ended up having panic attacks, and I ended up having panic attacks a lot. So for my last 2 years,
did you know that this was what was causing it?
No, I mean, attacks? I didn't even know to name it panic attacks, but I don't know if that's the technical definition. Basically what would happen is, and this would happen a lot, and it would happen all around the world, wherever I was, that at any moment, I never knew when, I would suddenly feel completely faint and dizzy and like I was about to pass out. So in New York, where I was living at the time, I lived in absolute fear that I would have one of these, what I now call panic attacks. I might have called them dizzy spells or something. I never really named them at the time. I lived in fear that it would happen in the middle of a New York City intersection. And that this is so macabre, but that I would have a panic attack, I would pass out, a cab would roll over me, and I wouldn't even look good for the funeral.
Whoa.
So vain and macabre at the same time. And what a way to live. And I lived this way for 2 years. I just couldn't walk down a street by myself for 2 years, couldn't take the subway. I had to take a taxi cab everywhere I went, everywhere, all day, every day for 2 years.
Wow. That's intense.
And I didn't really tell anyone. I didn't tell my co-founders. I didn't tell my parents who I was close with, my sister, my best friends, my doctor. I didn't even really admit the problem to myself. I just solved it. I just thought, okay, I'll just take a cab everywhere I go.
Had you always been someone who never really shared when you were challenged or struggling with something prior to?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it probably all goes back to the lie. It probably all goes back to what would the popular girls have done? And I think I would have guessed that they wouldn't have asked for help. They would have been cool. Everything's cool. I'm cool. So no, I mean, I just lived in this pattern of trying to guess what people wanted to hear from me at the expense of really anything, even my own health.
Yeah. And there's nothing cool about suffering in silence.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny is that it actually doesn't draw people into you. It repels people from you. In fact, as I think about it, I just said this yesterday. I was on this big panel with Forbes magazine and Goop and ClassPass and a couple other founders. And I realize now that being authentic is what draws people into you.
Absolutely.
And so by being so inauthentic, I actually lost a lot of power within my company. I started to not get invited to important meetings. And it wasn't that I wasn't strategic or important to the company from an internal or an external point of view, but it was because I was kind of not fun to be around. It was kind of uncomfortable for people to be around me. I know that now. And it was because I was so wildly inauthentic, because that's how I had trained myself to speak and to be.
How else do you think inauthenticity can hurt somebody?
Well, I mean, I truly believe, I'm not a doctor, but I truly believe that my panic attacks if that's what they were, these absolute terrorizing. I don't even know the appropriate adjective that's strong enough to describe how scary it was. I mean, at the height of one, I would truly, God, I'm afraid to even voice this. Okay, knock on the wooden table that's in front of us right now, Stephanie. But I would think I was going to die, to be completely honest. I've never said that out loud before. But that's how debilitating they were, and that's how scary they were. And I don't think it was the pressure of the job. Look, we're under a lot of pressure. When you raise that much money from VCs, it sounds great, but they're expecting you to have a $1 billion exit at that point. And our VCs were expecting us to have a $1 billion exit, and that's a lot of pressure for a first-time founder in a relatively new industry. I had worked in TV and politics before this. I had never been in business, so we were under a lot of pressure. I think the panic attacks were not that pressure, though. I think the panic attacks were the cognitive dissonance between who I was, really, who that little girl was before I made that vow in summer camp, and who I was pretending to be. And there was another element to that. The other big, big piece of the lack of authenticity is that I looked around and all the really successful founders that I saw and got to meet at different tech events around the world, like Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook or Peter Thiel from PayPal or Larry and Sergey from Google, Jeff Bezos from Amazon. All of these incredibly successful founders are all dudes. So I saw that and I thought, well, I want to be as successful as them. I want to be that Jeff Bezos that the next round of, you know, thousands of girls look up to. So I better act like he would act. Now, I have no idea what that is. Like, I might have met him at a party. I don't really know day to day what it's like to be him or Larry or Sergey. I thought it meant that they would work all the time and be really tough. So I just pretended to be really tough, which wasn't really me. And I started working all the time. And all of this took me away from me. And I mean, in a richly ironic way, it hurt me. I mean, it literally even hurt me within the company because I was so inauthentic that people just sort of viscerally want to distance themselves from me. It's funny because I think about people that are very authentic and sometimes they're very brash. Sometimes well, they're rude.
But see, that's what we want to call them, because if we've been trained to be so polite and controlled and whatever other things, like the people pleaser that we tell ourselves we need to be, then all of a sudden, if someone speaks their truth, we label them as something negative, right? Because it's what we're stuffing down within ourselves. So if we tell ourselves we can't be something and someone else is being that, then we judge it and we'll label it like brash, arrogant, bossy.
Wow, that's super insightful. I mean, right? I actually have a lot of thoughts on that.
Okay,
that are going to take us off track, but that's a very insightful comment that I've never heard before. But yeah, there's a lot of richness in there. That's very deep and very profound. It's funny. What I was originally going to say is that I think people are actually drawn to that. So even if someone is more brash than you'd want them to be, if they're authentic, there's something that's kind of wildly attractive about that. I mean, for instance, when I walked out of that first Vipassana, I hadn't spoken to anyone. I mean, it might have asked a couple questions to the assistant teacher, but it's basically a silent retreat. And they say 10 days, it's really 12 days because they don't count the first day and they don't count the last day. So I'd basically been living in my own thoughts and in my own skin and with my being in my consciousness for 12 days straight. By the end of that, you were vibrating so much as you. I was so me at the end of it. I fell in love right after. And would that guy have liked me in any other situation? I don't know, but I think I was so me. I was so authentic. I was such a pure form of human being that I think it was just wildly attractive to a man. And what's funny is I did another Vipassana.
Did you attract a man right after?
Yeah, I did another Vipassana and I attracted another man right after that too. I mean, I literally fell in love both times I've done these silent retreats within 30 hours of emerging.
So let me ask you this, because I get this question a lot where people have disengaged from themselves so much that they don't even know who they are anymore. And on the path to self-discovery, like, who am I really? It's still a, how do you discover that, right? And I heard you say, I was so me, I was vibrating as me. What does that mean? Like, what's that feeling? How do people actually know? Can you clarify that?
Wow, this is good stuff, girl. I've never talked about this. I've never talked about this publicly, and I'm not sure I've ever even had an internal dialogue on this. Let's go into this, shall we?
Yes.
Are we allowed to swear on this podcast? This is some deep shit, girl. okay, let me try to swim into this. As the girl who most of her many decades was not herself, how would I describe what it's like to be you? Okay, so I believe as a meditator, as a girl, as a person, that we have a core. And by the way, we have a very deep intuition that is within us. I think that meditation helps to get you there, but I think that it's always there. So I think anyone who chooses to meditate, or there are other tools for getting there, like spending a lot of time in nature. I'm sure Thoreau was vibrating very highly at his own frequency at Walden Pond. I think there are other ways to get there. But when you're you, I think of you as enveloped into your intuition and vice versa. And what happens is you're not thinking, should I say this? Should I not say this? Should I take this action? Should I not take it? You are in line with your very deep and very true intuition that will never mislead you. It's funny. I'll give you, this is a very non-obvious example, but what the heck? We're going into it, Stephanie.
Let's do it.
I'm blaming you for this.
Bring it.
So I made a move, a physical move, right when I moved back to New York after this big 2.5 year trip. Oh, so by the way, one moment to close the loop on the blip story. One moment when I couldn't cross the street to get to my office, a 13-second walk. I made the very bold, very non-obvious decision to leave the company and just say to myself that all the fame I'm getting and the potential fortune is not worth not being healthy enough to cross the street. And I ended up taking a 2.5 year trip around the world, during which I did both of those vipassanas. But so after all of that, I decided to come back to the United States and launch a meditation company. There's a whole story in there, but we'll get to that maybe or not. But long story short, I moved back to New York and I was so different. By the end of this trip, I was much more vibrating at me. And what's so funny is I started wearing different clothes. I made different friends. I was drawn to different makeup and I needed a different apartment. I mean, it was like I'd come back a different person, but who was actually me as that little girl before the bullying incident at summer camp. And so I moved apartments. I found an apartment that was so me. It's funny. My best friend came with me when I was looking at it. And she said, this apartment makes absolutely no sense. It was way too expensive and I couldn't host dinner parties there and I couldn't host teacher training programs, which I knew I wanted to do in meditation. There were all these requirements that I had and this apartment met absolutely none of them. She said, this apartment makes no sense, but it's the most you place I've ever seen. And I said, I agree, I have to have it. And she said, you have to have it. So I move in. And on the actual day of the move, which was Halloween, which is a crazy, crazy day if you're downtown in the West Village in New York, because you have the Halloween parade, which is absolute pandemonium. And I was moving literally across the parade. It's on Sixth Avenue. And I was just moving from one side of Sixth Avenue to the other side of Sixth Avenue during the parade. It's like crazy move. So I do the move and we finish at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And there was this big Burning Man camp, the super hipster one. Why am I blanking on the name? Do you know the one I'm talking about? That anyway, it's the super hipster. I'll think of it in a minute. Burning Man camp. And they started hosting their own Halloween parties and a bunch of other parties at different times around the year. So I'm going to this super hipster party wearing a hipster kind of Halloween slash sexy outfit to the Halloween party. And I decided to try and experiment. I said, I am going to only place my foot in front of the other foot and take a step in the direction of something if my intuition tells me to go there. Mm-hmm. So I will stand still if I feel like I'm meant to stand still. And if I feel like I need to move, I'm only going to follow my absolute direct core, my intuition, the heart of me. And so I did this. It's an amazing way to live. It's actually, even if you want to try it for 6 or 10 seconds, I've done it on retreat. So it's a intense thing to do on retreat. And it's a quite fun thing to practice doing in your daily life. So I walk into the party and I would stand still unless I felt a very strong intuition to move. And I just followed my intuition, followed my intuition, followed my intuition. And it's a little bit of a saucy story, but my intuition led me to one spot where a very good looking young man came up and said, hi, what's your name? And I said, Dina. And I ended up really liking this guy. He ended up playing a role in my life. And we had a great night together. The night that I'd moved into my brand new apartment with boxes everywhere.
Did he help you move?
And yeah, he did. He helped with everything. He actually even helped the path my brand new company at the time find a place to host our meditations. And it was just so funny as a single girl in New York at the time to have my intuition directly lead me to exactly the man that I was meant to meet that night. So that's what happens when you're vibrating as you and you have the confidence and surrender, as they say in the spiritual world, to not follow what you think you quote unquote should do, but to just directly follow footstep by footstep. Where does my intuition want to take me?
That's so powerful. I know that's been one of my greatest lessons, is like tapping into my intuition and really trusting myself, because I can second guess quite a bit and go into doubt and analysis paralysis. But when I quiet that voice and actually just tune in, it's amazing where our heart can guide us, which is really to our truth and to where we're supposed to be. Do you have some, because I know you're so deep in that spiritual world and it's so amazing, and I know you got a bunch of tools to teach, but what are some ways for people to really tap into that intuition? I love this one exercise that you said, which I'm going to try doing, and hopefully everyone who's listening will do it, where it's like standing there, right? Stand there and don't move until you feel called to take steps. And then when you feel like you should stop, just stop, but just only move when you feel guided. Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very intense exercise. This wouldn't necessarily be a beginner's exercise. When I first did this, I was being led by a guru in India amidst a very, very, very intense retreat. And she told us, even every one of us was a pretty experienced meditator, and we were days into a retreat and we were in India and it was very spiritual. And even then she said, let's just try this for 10 seconds because that's how intense it is. So, I mean, if you're up for it, you can try it. Just be easy on yourself. It's less about not walking. I don't mean to imply that you're standing still. It's, she calls it following your truth. And so it is follow your truth. Where are you meant to step next? So it's more about, do I go left now? Do I go straight? Do I go right? And if you can practice for 10 seconds, even once a week, it's a lot of learning to do. Mm-hmm. It's about beginning the process. I mean, there's a great book on this about living in the must rather than living in the should. And that's really what this is all about. What happens if we do away with this should thing? Mm-hmm. I should do this. I should say that. And absolutely follow your truth in what you say, even if it means giving negative feedback to a romantic partner or a friend or a team member, that thing I was so afraid to do at my first company, or even if it's about emailing somebody at a certain moment or not doing something or doing something. I guess it could be about asking yourself, what's my truth right now? And I don't mean that in a cheesy way. I mean, what does my intuition tell me to do? And it's never going to be wrong. That intuition, if you can get to it, is so powerful. It's much more wisdom than we have in our minds, mm-hmm. in our heads.
So what are some ways that people can start tapping into that intuition?
Yeah. So I am a huge advocate of meditation. So I'll give you a few ways out of this, I promise. But I do think meditation, especially if you're living in a city and not on Walden Pond, I think meditation is a very powerful way to do it. If it feels intimidating, you could start with a minute. I think dads have a really hard time, especially if they're working. And so if you need to go into the friggin' bathroom and close the door so it looks like you're going to the bathroom, maybe doing something serious in there, put that seat down and sit on the friggin' toilet for a minute, and that's your only chance, then you know what? That's great. You've done that. That's fine. And if you're a mom and you need to do that, then you can do that too. If you can get to 5 minutes, great. I think eventually, if you can get to 20 minutes or half an hour, I do an hour every day, you will start to have intuition and you'll start to have all of these unbelievable coincidences start happening in your life where you think of someone and then they walk in front of you, even though they don't live in the city that you're in. You'll think of someone and maybe they'll send you a text at that exact second if they're across the world. So that's a wonderful way to do it.
If someone's a beginner meditator, so never done it before, what do they do during this 1 minute or 5 or 10 if they can?
Yeah, so I actually write a lot for Forbes. So I think the third article that I wrote is entitled A 10-Minute Meditation to Reduce Stress. So you could just find that if you just Google my name and Forbes and stress, it'll come up with that. But I can give the instructions now. I would suggest sitting with a straight back, feet flat on the ground, top of the head pointing up to the sky. Close your eyes and very gently just focus your attention. So this is only an exercise of the mind, not of the breath. Focus your attention on the sensation of the breath as it comes in and comes out of your nostril. And so just see what you notice as your very natural breath. So not more quickly or less quickly than normal, but what do you notice as the breath comes in and exits your nostrils? Is it a tingly sensation? Does it feel hot? Does it feel cool? Does it feel rushed? Does it feel relaxed? Just what sensations do you notice? And then when a thought comes in, which is not just happening to you, your brain is not wired differently than anyone else's. Thoughts will come in, even for the me, even for the Dalai Lama, even for the most advanced meditators in the world. The act of meditation is not trying to clear your mind of thoughts. It's only in how you respond to thoughts. So you can smile to yourself that you've noticed a thought. That is a beautiful sign of mindfulness. And then just choose to watch that thought float away like a cloud. Or I increasingly think about the little sailboats on the Jardin du Luxembourg or some other ponds around the world. So I think of a little child sailboat floating off in a little pond. So you can think about your thought floating away like a little child sailboat. And then with kindness and a smile, just very gently bring your attention back to the sensations of the breath. And I'll just note that there's no such thing as a quote unquote good meditation or a bad meditation. If you're meditating, you're meditating. Don't worry, it's working, even if you think it's not. If you're running, you're running. You're not like, oh, that foot didn't go in front of the other foot. You know, you're running. So when you're meditating, you're just meditating and it's working. We're a terrible gauge of how quote unquote good a meditation is. Meditation is really just the act of paying attention to what's happening with no judgment. Mm-hmm. And so when you notice a thought, that's an invitation to simply return to the sensations of the breath. Sorry, meditation, I should say, meditation has different types. This type that I'm guiding you in right now is mindfulness. So it's actually the definition of mindfulness is paying attention to the present moment with no judgment. There are different types of meditation, so I won't give that basic of a definition, but I think this mindfulness meditation that I've just guided you guys in is a beautiful, beautiful, delicious way to start.
Yes. So if you were to look back on the Dina who was running herself ragged, people pleasing, not using her voice, and starting to have those panic attacks, the moment that starts to come up, because I know people are starting to get physical ailments like crazy and they don't tune in and they ignore it. You know I've been that way before until finally my body is literally screaming at me.
Well, that's what happened with my panic attacks.
Yes.
I was not tuned in that. I think my body was just knew that I was meant to do something bigger and I was meant to survive this.
Yeah. But knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently the moment you started noticing something going awry with your body? Instead of ignoring it.
Damn, you're good, girl. I thought I'd answered every question on this and you have really made me think. So thank you for the invitation to mindfulness amidst our conversation. I would say three things. One, I was so unmindful then and meditation wasn't as popular for mainstream people as it is now, but I wish I had gone to a great teacher. Because there are great teachers alive today. And I do think it's easiest and most inspiring to learn from a teacher. Sharon Salzberg is based in New York. She's actually guiding this leadership retreat that hopefully I can chat with you guys about in a little bit. She's based in New York. And if I'd gone to any of her events, meditations that she was running, she would have given me the tools to have a daily practice. Because I was meditating at the time, but absolutely no idea what I was doing. And I was getting it from a book, so I felt disconnected from it. So I think there's nothing quite like sitting with a live teacher and learning, especially from one of the greats. So I wish I had gone to one of the greats, and I wish I had developed a daily meditation practice. Meditation at a time like that, for sure, would have given me the insight to get the friggin' heck out of this situation that I was in. Immediately. I mean, I had to get out. And I guess in retrospect, I should have, if that's a word, gotten out a few years earlier. So I'd say find, for your community, I would say find a great teacher, a great, great teacher. They are around, and go study with them and learn the tools for a daily practice that's right for you. There are different types of meditation in the world. And so figure out what's the right practice for you and study with someone and then meditate. And if you can do it an hour a day, it will change your life. Two, I wish that I had had the confidence to be myself, even to one person. So I think it's really important for founders or really anyone who's stressed to have the confidence to be raw and real with even one friend, a mentor. It could be a religious figure if you're Jewish or Catholic or whatever it is. It could be someone from that world. It could be a sibling, a parent. Just find somebody, anybody that you can be real with. And I think if I'd sat down and told, I mean, oh my God, I could have told my best friend, Kathy Reba, who now teaches meditation for kids, which is funny. We were so not that back in the day. But she probably would have looked at me and said, you got to get out of here. And three, and I say this going to sound silly, but I actually mean it with full force. Friggin' wish I'd played more.
Yes.
If you look at videos of animals, think about polar bears or what are the little cute koala bears or
goats.
I mean, think about any animal and you have video of them and they're, you know, candid. they're not doing anything for the camera. They're playing a lot of their day. And we might be a little different in that our consciousness is a little different. We have a little more thoughts in our minds probably than most of the other animals, but we're animals. We're animals and animals are meant to play.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I should have started a friggin' hula hoop club on the High Line because who's going to stop us? And I love to dance and I should have woken up every morning and put on Rihanna, We Found Love, and friggin' dance my face off in the morning. I mean, I just wish I'd played more. And so my invitation to your community is, I don't know what it is that you love. Maybe you love making paper mache animals, or maybe you love to dance like me or hula hoop, which I kind of love.
I love dancing. I'm right there with you, sister.
Yeah. I mean, or maybe you like doing cartwheels or pottery or friggin' whatever it is, but play and have fun. As I say to my community at The Path, there is no prize at the end of life for suffering. There's no prize. Like, okay, you've made it, you've died, you suffered the most, you win. No. Like, have fun, have friggin' fun. We're animals, we're meant to have fun. And the irony is that when you have more fun, by the way, you're far more pleasant to be around and you do better at work too. You'll get better work done. You'll be more efficient.
More creative.
People won't stop inviting you to meetings because you're no fun, which happened to me at Blip. Like, I wouldn't invite myself to a meeting now. I was so serious. And when everyone took a 12-minute break every day to play video games and I was like, oh my God, they're playing video games. We have so much work to do. And I would double down on work. They invited me every single afternoon to join the video games, and every single afternoon for 5 years, I said no. So friggin' get a friggin' life and have fun.
Totally. Thank you for those amazing tips, especially the last one. I'm so in alignment with that. Play. It's like, why are we on this planet anyway if we're not playing and having fun?
And by the way, I mean, literally, it makes you better at work. So yes, play, play, play.
Yes. And I would even bring up our conversation that we had before we even started recording is just appreciating the moments. Right?
Yeah, I had a big moment this morning. Ooh. Big. Should I share it?
Share it.
So I do get up. I do a little run. And when I say a little run, I mean literally a little run. I run for 4 minutes a day, but hey, it's something, girl. So I did my run and then I do yoga, but not a lot. I do about 12 minutes and listen to something inspirational. And then I meditate. So I did all this morning, but it was this beautiful morning. It has not been beautiful here for a while. So I was running super late and I have so much work to do today. We're launching this big leadership retreat called Mela. It's amazing. Biggest thing I've done in my life, kind of creating like a TED for meditation, you might say. So it's so much work to do for it. But I took an Uber to my co-working place in Santa Monica across campus where we are now. And I was so late and so stressed. I wrote on a to-do list of 75 things to get done today.
Just 75?
It might have been 76. And I was stressed. And yet on the way, this song came on the radio and it was Tiny Dancer from Elton John. And I can't really sing, but if it doesn't ring a bell, it's like, hold me closer, Tiny Dancer. Okay, I totally can't sing. But the song came on and I said, oh my God, I love this song. Can you turn it up a little bit? So he turned it up a little bit. And then we got there. We got here. We got to Cross Campus. And he said, do you want to stay and hear the song? And I said, pause. And I said, yes. And he said, oh, I was joking. But I didn't hear the bing that he had another call. So I said, you know what? I actually am going to stay. Can you turn it up a little bit more? So he turned it up a little more. I did the most bold action any founder can do. I took my phone and I put it aside. Oh my God. I took it out
you
of
did
my,
what?
I took it out of my hand and I put it out of arm's reach. Literally. It was the most bold thing any founder could ever do. I even took my knapsack and pushed it, literally pushed it to the other seat. And I lay back into this cozy chair. It was a pretty nice car from my Uber ride this morning. And I closed my eyes and I listened to the ending of Tiny Dancer by Elton John. And as I lay there, I had chills running up and down through my entire body and I started crying. And I realized this was 90 seconds. It was a minute and a half. It was time during the day that I probably might have wasted on Instagram or Facebook or an email I didn't really need to respond to. I took the invitation that some spiritual force had given out there or someone gave me to listen to a beautiful song for 90 seconds. And I felt full of love. I don't know how else to put it. I felt full of love for Elton John, for whoever invented radio, for my friggin' Uber driver, for being willing to turn it up. And I felt love for myself, actually, for taking this moment. And I thought, how funny that in 90 seconds, I could fall so in love with being alive and with this idea of life and consciousness. And truly, really what happened is I fell in love with myself for taking that moment. And I'm going to have, and I am having, an amazing day today, and all it took was 90 seconds. So take the invitation.
Yeah, and then it doesn't have to be this whole huge thing, but those 90 seconds, if you just pause, appreciate, and honor yourself for the moment, it works magic in your life.
So. I mean, I've had such a magical day, and I think it's not a coincidence. Like, take the invitation. Mm-hmm. It's all choices. We have so many choices in front of all of us every day. Mm-hmm. We can choose to respond negatively if someone's really mean to us, or we can actually choose to respond lovingly if someone's mean to us. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why not?
And what's interesting is I always remember this is however you choose to respond is what you're doing to yourself, right? So if someone's being a jerk and you respond in a really mean way, you actually have to feel the meanness in order to give it to someone else. So you're doing that to yourself versus if you respond with love and compassion, you get to feel that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and nobody gets to take the power away from our
day. No, I know. I mean, in fact, technically that I'm in this really intense, amazing meditation course now called Finder's Course. And what I was doing meditating on the beach this morning is this exercise that an incredible man named Lester Levinson thought of. He cured himself of heart disease from this. And what he did, well, the modern incarnation, which has to do with Evernote, which wasn't around then, but they invite us to put on Evernote, or I guess it could be a notebook, lists of people that you've met in your life, including anyone that's ever had a thing with you negatively or that you've ever had a thing with. So anyone you've ever had any issue with at all, from nursery school, elementary school, travels, high school, college, work, everything is just lists of people. I mean, I have rapists on this list. I have like the most evil ex-boyfriends. I have co-founders that have done terrible, terrible things to me. I mean, all sorts of stuff on this list. Relatives that have been nutty, like everything. And every day, at the beginning of the day, I fill myself up with the emotion of love.
Yep.
I think of my sister or my mom or my best friend, Kathy. And then I just map it. So it's not intellectual. Like, I know they did this because this happened in their childhood. It's not this whole mishigas of explaining away why they acted the way they act. It is literally choosing to love that person. It is, mm-hmm. I bring up the emotion of love and I choose to send it to you. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that I did do that for 20 minutes very early in the day today. And you realize everything is a choice. And I choose only to live with love. That is my choice.
100% in alignment. Same. I remember when I dated a super toxic, like sociopathic and it was, I had a lot of resentment after that when I finally realized what was going on. And someone said to me, can you send him love. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? What? She's like, again, you're harming yourself with holding on to this resentment. And so I would sit there at night and like basically pray for him, like wish him well. There's a Ho'oponopono prayer where it's like you wish others well just as you'd want to wish yourself well. And I was just reassociating this feeling in myself to just send out that love, but really to neutralize all the resentment I was feeling inside. So I would actually invite anybody who's listening, if you're holding on to resentment, to let that go and stop hurting yourself with it and do what you said, Dina, you know, which is thinking of somebody you love and then mapping that onto the people who have hurt you so that you can release them and be free of it.
Or whom you've hurt too.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah. I'd love for you to share a bit about the path because it's so powerful what you've created. And if people need support through the path, you can share all about it.
Yeah. So the insight I got 87 hours into meditating on that first Vipassana in India was that I was going to come out of this retreat a better person, having finally realized and remembered that vow I made to myself as a little girl and realized that this pleasing thing was not serving me. And I was ready to take out that piece of the puzzle of my personality and put in a new piece and see if I could fit it in called authenticity. It was like this flash of lightning shot up from my feet through my legs and exploded over my head that said, you're going to come out of this retreat a better person. Everyone should have the chance to do this, but it doesn't need to be this hard. So when you come out of this travel and feel like you're ready to return to the United States, you'll start a company, you'll call it The Path. It's like this voice came to me that said this, and you'll make meditation fun and easy and dare we say sexy. Ooh. And you'll spread it to the mainstream, including saving your former self. So we do cater a lot to founders, entrepreneurs, investors, people part of the startup scene, but also a lot of creatives, people in film and fashion and publishing. And we open our arms with a big smile and lots of love to anyone who wants to join us. So we do a lot of things. We host weekly meditations in New York. We do a lot of book launches for big, big authors like Sharon Salzberg and Matthew Ricard, Robert Thurman, some other big, big names. But the big thing that we're launching right now is the biggest thing I've actually ever done professionally in my life, including everything at The Path and everything at Blip. It's called Mela, which means to gather in Sanskrit. And it's a leadership retreat. So it's for people who want to learn how to apply mindfulness, not just in their personal lives, but in their work lives as well. So just mindfulness in all aspects of your life and how to be a more conscious leader, whether you're a coach or a therapist or running a company with 1,000 people or leading a household, whatever leadership means to you. And I'm super excited about it. If anyone is interested, please email us at sit@thepath.com. So very easy to remember. Sit is another way to say meditating. Like we guide sits, we guide meditation. So it's just sit@thepath.com. And we'd love to tell you more about it. You can tell us a little bit about yourself and we'll get right back to you. Or you can go to thepath.com or thepath.com/mela apply. And I'd love to share with you and your community more about that. We also run a lot of teacher training programs. So we just launched one. Really excited about this. It's in compassion teacher training. So I don't know of a program like this that exists anywhere else in the world. But our teachers for teacher training programs have been teaching mindfulness for 3.5 years now. And so I think they said, Dina, could we do something in compassion? Let's try something new. I know that the Dalai Lama says this is the most important type of meditation to practice in today's world. I'm sure you know why, from political and leadership and all sorts of other issues in corporate America and startups covering the headlines. I think there's nothing more important than compassion. So we're running that. I'm actually moving back to New York to take it myself as a student, even though we're hosting it at The Path. But if you're interested in getting certified to teach meditation or really even in just deepening your practice or even just living in community for 3 months, because the people in these programs are amazing, you can go to thepath.com or the teacher trainings are at thepath.com/training. So the compassion one is already filled up. We actually sold it and then accidentally oversold it by a few people, but we're about to send out the dates for the mindfulness training that we'll do in the fall. So we'd love to invite members of your community to do that as well.
Thank you. Yes. I could talk to you forever because I have so many more questions, but we got to wrap this up and I'm going to ask you 3 final questions that I ask all my guests. It's the Unlock Your Heart round. So the first question is this: what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
That's a fun question. Okay, so I used to work at MTV and I love politics. I'm super, super passionate about getting more young people involved in politics because the AARP has so much power. Like, young people need to stand up and fight to be heard, which we're seeing a lot now thanks to the whole gun rights movement, or anti-gun rights movement, I should say, which has been really, really inspiring to watch. But so I used to work at MTV News. I worked specifically on Choose or Lose, which was seeking to get young people more interested in politics. So I had one of the greatest moments of my life was taking Chuck D from Public Enemy around the Republican convention. And no joke. So I was really into politics. And I don't know if everyone at MTV would have known to do this, but I saw Strom Thurmond, who was a senator at the time. I mean, I think the oldest senator, I think, in U.S. history. He looked like the oldest man in the history of the country. But I saw him on the floor and I thought, this is going to be a great live TV moment. So while we are going live, I bring Chuck D over, introduce him to Strom Thurmond, and the two of them speak live on MTV. And I mean, that might be the greatest moment of my television career.
That's awesome. I'll have to see if that's on the YouTube somewhere. You never know. So when you're in a really dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
Ice cream and fudge. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking. I'm on this no sugar diet. Wow, that's a great question. I kind of felt it a bit last night. This course that I'm in, Finder's Course, is very intense. And it's not all easy because it just brings up the muck inside you. So that's a great question. You know what? I have actually an answer to this, and you're going to laugh because I can laugh at myself. But I had a really tough birthday, which is over Christmas this year, back and forth with a guy. It was really, really hard. And it's so, so richly funny to me that I'm not drawn by alcohol. So I don't drink, I don't do drugs, and it's not discipline. It's just, I'm not drawn to it at all. But I am drawn to retreats because I love being around in community. And I kind of think we're meant to be living in community. And everyone on a retreat is there to meet other people and become a better version of themselves. So at the depths of a really, really, really difficult time for me, I was like running around like an animal, not to the bar, but trying to find a retreat that I could go on. And it was so funny because I found one that was in Malibu. I was in near Venice at the time. And so I called them and I'm like, I saw that you have a retreat. And they're like, yes. I'm like, when is it starting? And they said, in an hour and a half. This was at 4:30. It started at 6. And I'm like, it's in Malibu, right? I'm like, yes. I'm like, how many days? They said 7 days. I'm like, 6 nights? And they said, yes. And I said, I'll be there. And they're like, what? And I'm like, I'm packing right now. I'm coming. And I literally put myself on a 7-day retreat. Wow. With 2 minutes notice. And then I'm actually not kidding. So I have a no lying vow. So I will honor that now. I have been on 8 retreats so far this year.
That sounds like heaven. I love retreats.
I mean, I love retreats. What's bad about retreats? Retreats are great.
Were all those retreats sparked by you in a tough moment or just because you're a retreat junkie?
I think I had a tough early start to the year. I won't lie to you. Yeah, I had a tough start to the year. A lot of stuff was coming up. I do think I'm meant to be writing more, and I've been running my company, trying to figure out what's going on with the guy, although that all worked out. Yay. And when I'm in a dark place, I seek community. Mm.
So beautiful.
I might also hop on a plane, which I do a lot. I've taken same day trips to Laos. I once got back from a month in Sicily and missed it and told a friend I missed it. And they said, why don't you go back? And I booked a same day ticket back. So somewhere between retreats or travel. And then I also go travel on retreat sometimes too.
And community. All right, Dina. So knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 8-year-old self?
Oh, so I am in a very deep spiritual process of bringing her into my life. So this is very, very real. It takes a whole village for me to stay as happy and positive as I am. And so one of the mentors in my life is telling me to carry her with me, like carry her in my arms, which I am doing now. What she is telling me so strongly is just to say what's on your mind. Speak your truth. It sounds like a ridiculous thing a spiritual person like the founder of The Path would tell you, but you friggin' know it. Girl, guy, whoever's listening, you know what your truth is. Say it. What's funny is what feels so scary to say is what people, I promise, want to hear from you. Ask for what you want. Ask for it. People don't want to guess what you want, whether it's a guy or a girl that you're dating, whether it's your parents, a sibling, a colleague, someone above you, below you, your investor, your client. People generally want to make you happy. So you got to ask for what you want. So what I would have told to my 8-year-old self is ask for what you want. And tell people when you need help. People want to help you. Think about it. You listening. How would you feel if someone reached out for help? You'd feel flattered, right? And you'd feel awesome if you could help them. I just helped someone. I got an email from someone who just lost her dog. She's absolutely devastated. And I helped her. I gave her some ideas. And yes, I did it for her. But do I feel awesome about how nice I am to have done that? Yes, I love myself more for that. So I would tell that 8-year-old girl, ask for what you want. Reach out for help because people will want to help you. Even selfishly, people want to help you. Ask for help.
Ooh, Dina, thank you so much for sharing your heart, for sharing your wisdom, and for sharing your joy. I love little Dina coming out to play.
She's coming out and she's fierce. Think about it. Kids ask her what they want. They're all like, the I'm time. Hungry. I have to go to the bathroom. I want to burp. They might express themselves through crying, but they're not suppressing themselves. I think we should all act like a 1-year-old.
Totally. And they tell you, I like that. I don't like that.
Yeah.
All the time and with no shame.
Yeah, they're not living in the should. Yeah, so we all need to live that way. Most people want you to be happy. Tell them how to make you happy.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Adore you and can't wait to connect more.
Thank you.
How awesome was that? I just love stories when people break through old limiting beliefs, especially the I'm not good enough one, and deeply own their truth and fully express who they are unapologetically, because that is true freedom. And you know that intuition piece that Dina was talking about, I've actually constantly been in the practice to develop mine. And as I have, it's made life so magical. Because your intuition is work from the heart and is the highest form of intelligence. You know, your intuition gives you access to your creative self-expression, and it's in essence your connection to the subconscious mind. Because it's how the subconscious mind communicates with the conscious mind. And this is why your intuition is such an amazing source of creative power, of wisdom, and of understanding. Because it transcends the realm of experience or reasoning. So tap into it, people. Tap into your intuition.
If you want a little support with tapping into your heart and intuition, make sure you check out my free self-love gift that I have for you. It's a free self-love kickstart that will give you some powerful practices to get you on your journey to owning your worth, rocking your confidence, and opening up to your own love to radically transform your life. And you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart.
All right. So if you want more goodness from Dina, go check out my Instagram at I am Stephanie Kwong, where I've got a mini video of Dina sharing 3 more awesome tips to empower you. Now, I post these extra wisdom bombs from all of my guests on my Instagram for you so that it becomes a place for you to go to for the inspiration and empowerment that you might need. And if there's someone that you know who could benefit from this episode, please share it out with them. Also, if you want support in loving yourself and releasing the I'm not good enough story, go check out my free self-love gift that I've got for you. It's a free self-love kickstart that will give you some powerful practices to get you on your journey to owning your worth, rocking your confidence, and opening up to your own love to radically transform your life. And you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. And finally, for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for the links to connect with Dina, you can check it out in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP15. And you can also check out all my other podcast episodes there too. So until next time, I'm sending you so much love.